And it shall come to pass, when thou shalt have the dominion, that thou shalt break his yoke from off thy neck. And Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing wherewith his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, the days of mourning for my father are at hand. Then will I slay my brother Jacob. You may be seated. Esau passed this hatred of Jacob to his children. They waited for Jacob to return from Syria. Syria's in the news again, isn't it? From Syria, after he had left his father's and mother's request. Esau was ready to murder him. Let's review. Number one, Jacob received the birthright from Esau in a deal in which Esau traded it for a bowl of red lentil soup. Can you imagine that? Number two, Isaac had blessed Jacob, but Jacob obtained it deceitfully from him with help from his mother. Three, Jacob had been sent to Syria to take a wife of his own kind. Jacob was charged not to take a wife of the Canaanites. He married his mother's niece. Four, Esau's Canaanite wives did not please his parents, so Esau married his father's niece, an Ishmaelite. Five, Jacob obeyed his parents by going to Syria. He was there for 20 years. Before Jacob left on his journey, his father called to him and blessed him and gave him a charge. It's Genesis chapter 28, 1 and 4. Now, this is after his first blessing. This is another blessing. And I don't think most people really realize this. So let's read Genesis chapter 28, verse 1 and 4. And Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said unto him, thou shalt not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan. Arise, go to Padan-Aram, which is Syria, to the house of Bethuel, thy mother's father, and there take a wife from thence of the daughters of Laban, thy mother's brother. That would be Jacob's uncle. And God bless thee and make thee fruitful and multiply thee, that thou mayest be a multitude of people. And give, what? The blessing of Abraham to thee, and to thy seed with thee. Well, that's us. That thou mayest inherit the land wherein thou art a stranger, which God gave unto Abraham. Well, that's what Isaac said to Jacob before he left. The blessing given by Isaac to Jacob was freely given. It was not attained by deceit like the other blessing. This should erase all doubts that Jacob had the birthright that his older twin brother lost by despising it. For he had sold it for practically nothing, and the blessing was lost to him by deceit. The birthright now, without a doubt, belonged to Jacob. This charge that Jacob's father gave to him concerned Israel's separation from heathen nations. God is consistent in charging his people with this task. He even charged Abraham and completely forbid Israel to integrate with other nations, commanding them to dwell alone and not to be reckoned among them. Esau failed to keep his part of the race pure and was a grief to his parents. God cursed such carelessness in Israel. Notice, the promise was to the seed of Jacob, that was to inherit the blessings of Abraham. Now we're going to turn to a New Testament verse. And what do you think we're going to find? Galatians 3:14. That the blessing of Abraham might come on the Gentiles, the nations of the 10 tribes of Israel who had been divorced by God for over 7 centuries and who were without any hope. Through Jesus Christ, that we might receive the promise of the Spirit through faith. America's situation now. America has been for quite some time no longer a segregationist nation, but a practicing integration nation. It adores multiculturalism. That came in about the 1970s. As a result, its population is quickly becoming non-white. But few of its present citizens even know about America's Christian past. In the colonial times, both Roman Catholics and Jews were forbidden by colonial law to hold office and vote. Now we have a Supreme Court represented both by these two groups exclusively. America is about to pay big time for all of its sins. I'll list some of its sins. There's a whole bunch. How about abortion? How about sodomy, sorcery, which is drug dependency, free love, robbery, theft, murder, lies, feminism, democracy, unlawful unsupreme court rulings, false Christian doctrines, not knowing who the enemies of Christianity are, miscegenation, multiculturalism, so forth and so forth and so forth. And most of these used to be against the law. God is angry and is ready to judge our nation and our brother nations. Look at the situation and see if what I'm saying is not correct. First thing I'm going to talk about is about an intensive 6-year investigation has revealed the identity of the man whose Social Security number is being used by President Obama. Jean Paul Ludwig, who was born in France in the year 1890, immigrated to the United States in 1924, and was assigned Social Security number 042-68-4425, which is President Obama's current Social Security number, received on or about March 1977. That means Obama was about 15 and a half years old when he received this Social Security number, for he was born on August the 4th, 1961. Mr. Ludwig lived most of his adult life in Connecticut. Because of that, his Social Security number begins with the digits 042, which are reserved for Connecticut residents. Barack Hussein Obama or Barry Sertoro never lived or worked in that state. Therefore, there is no reason on earth for a Social Security number to start with the digits 042. None whatsoever. Now comes the best part. How did Obama get Ludwig's Social Security number? If I took somebody else's Social Security number, that'd be called fraud. I'd be put in jail. Anybody would. J.P. Ludwig spent the final months of his life in the state of Hawaii, where he died. Who is living there? Conveniently, Obama's grandmother, Madeline Payne Dunham, worked part-time in the probate office in the Honolulu, Hawaii courthouse, and therefore had access to the Social Security numbers of deceased individuals. The Social Security Administration was never informed of Ludwig's death, and because he never received Social Security benefits, there were no benefits to stop, and therefore no questions were ever raised. The suspicion, of course, is that Dunham knowing her grandson was not a United States citizen, either because he was born in Kenya or became a citizen of Indonesia upon his adoption by Lolo Sortoro, simply scored the probate records until she found someone who died and was not receiving Social Security benefits and selected Mr. Ludwig's Connecticut Social Security number for her grandson. So you can forget about the fake birth certificate. Nobody is allowed to use somebody else's Social Security number. Although many Americans do not understand the meaning of the term natural born, unquote, there are a few who do not understand if you're using somebody else's Social Security numbers, it's a clear indication of fraud and a federal offense. Barry Sotaro, a.k.a. Obama, is guilty and is a mongrel just like the supposed killer of the 9 people in Roseburg, Oregon. More about that later. Second, on October the 2nd, 2015, Russia started its air campaign against ISIL in Syria following a request for assistance from Damascus in the fight against terrorism. Soon after the first Russian strikes in Syria, some media outlets were quick to come up reports claiming that the Moscow-led campaign already resulted in civilian deaths. October 2nd, 2015. Amply documented but rarely mentioned in news reports, the ISIS is a creation of U.S. intelligence. Recruited, trained, and financed by the United States and its allies, including Britain, France, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Turkey, Israel, and Jordan. Until recently, the ISIS was known as Al-Qaeda in Iraq. In 2014, it was renamed the Islamic State. One important piece of unspoken information conveyed in the Wall Street Journal report is that the CIA is supporting terrorists as a means to trigger regime change in Syria, implying the conduct of covert intelligence operations within Syrian territory. Here's the quote from the Wall Street Journal. The U.S. spy agency has been arming and training rebels in Syria since 2013 to fight the Assad regime. That's the quote. October 5th, 2015. Colonel Alexander Shilin, military expert of the Russian Federation, explains in layman's terms Russia's natural interest in supporting Assad or Syria. A number of Russians and Westerners as well have some misunderstanding about Russia's involvement. As the colonel explains, this is not an optional fight for Russia. In the event Syria fell, it would free ISIS fighters for renewed campaigns in Chechnya, Dagestan, and east of the Caspian, pushing north from Afghanistan into former Soviet Central Asia. ISIS is a rebranding and broadening of the Saudi et al-Bak network of foreign legionary soldiers previously called Al-Qaeda and the Maqtad Al-Qamat network that preceded it. October 7, 2015, 4 days ago. Over the past days, Russian warplanes have flown more than 100 air raids, hitting around 80 military targets, with not a single civilian in the country has been harmed during Russia's bombing campaign of military targets. When the American, French, and Australian air forces delivered their airstrikes over Syria, they never adapted their efforts to coordinate with the military of the Saudi Arab Republic. Those Western warplanes dropped their bombs and missiles on the Syrian armed forces as well as the country's civilians. Moscow has a legal basis for conducting its anti-terrorist operation in Syria. Then I got a little picture here. Treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort, U.S. Constitution, Article 3, Section 3, And there's John McCain adhering to members of ISIS in Syria. The third thing was September 29, 2015. The next planned crisis has been in the works since 1945. I was born in 42. And it's planned to destroy the economies, is planned to destroy the economies of the developed world. It will flood the world with refugees and overload the welfare and criminal justice system to the point where they fall apart. Well, that's happening right now. I'll make a little comment here. Non-Semitic Edomites are part of the serpent seed, accursed of God, and sworn to kill Jacob Israel. Israel's king and priest John Hyrcanus hired mercenaries, defeated the Edomites, and gave the edict, be circumcised and assimilate or be killed to the last man. They were hereafter no other than Jews. That's from Josephus, Antiquity of the Jews. And it says in the Bible, thus Jesus and his followers dared not walk or speak openly in Judea, quote, for fear of the Jews, unquote. Edom is in modern Jewry. That's a Jewish encyclopedia, 1925 edition. With the mark of their father Cain, the Edomites have learned to overcome and subjugate their enemies by miscegenation, using innocent races and cultures by changing laws to legalize miscegenation and introduce immigrants, quote, as it was in the days of Noah. The deception. And this brings us up to now. Are America and the other sons of Jacob's nation segregated? Well, no. Look at the example they had consequences last week. A Caucasian British man, Ian Mercer, married a Negro African woman, Laura Harper, and produced a son, Chris Harper Mercer. This birth was by miscegenation. They got divorced 10 years ago. Several years ago, Chris Harper Mercer moved to Winchester, Oregon from Torrance, California with his mother, who works as a nurse. His father, Ian Mercer, originally from the United Kingdom, told reporters outside his Tarzania, California home, quote, I'm just as shocked as anybody at what happened. The Army said Chris Harper Mercer flunked out of basic training in 2008. Army spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Ben Garrett said Chris Harper Mercer was in the military for a little over a month at Fort Jackson, South Carolina, but was discharged for failing to meet the minimum standards. Garrett did not say which standards Chris Mercer failed. Generally, the Army requires recruits to pass physical fitness tests and to be in generally good physical and mental health. Recruits must also pass a multiple choice test covering science, math, reading, comprehension, and other topics. I've got a picture. There is the father on the right, Ian Mercer. He's Caucasian. And his black wife, Laura Harper, on the right. They married. And their offspring is the mongrel Chris Harper Mercer. That's the only picture I basically found of this guy. Here's where the school is located. It's at the far west southern part of Oregon. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Where is Roseburg, Oregon? When was it founded? Who founded it? Fortunately, we have a reader of the New Covenant Messenger who has lived there for many years, and he called me about this situation. He had just left there recently. In fact, he had returned to Roseburg and was having lunch when the supposed event occurred. He has actually visited our church several times. For those who remember him, he was the man with the wonderful dog. And the man, as Joyce said today, reading the hymnals, he was the man who bought us our hymn books. He tells me that Roseburg is an isolated town. It is surrounded on all four sides by the Callahan Mountains. There is a lot of logging that has and is going on throughout, although it has experienced difficult times in recent years. He told me that the town was founded by Aaron Rose,
a Jew,
who was born in Ulster County in the state of New York in 1813. Now, how did he get from New York out to Oregon? He didn't go from New York to Oregon. He was in New York, and when he was 24 years old, he moved to Girard, Michigan, where he lived and got married. When he was 38 years old, he got the Western fever. That's about the time, the 49ers is the gold rush. So it's about time for the gold rush. He moved his family to the present site of Roseburg, Oregon. He was the first man to locate there. He built a house and was very successful as his house was being used as a tavern and trading post for old pioneers who were traveling over the road to and from the mines. He later became a director and a stockholder in the Douglas County Bank. The town was actually built on Mr. Rose's farm. He did a lot of logging and became very wealthy. Here's something I did not find in any of the news stories. He founded the Masonic Lodge in 1849. It's called the Masonic Lodge number 13. Well, the town was incorporated in 1851, so the Masonic Lodge was founded before the town. They said, what better way than to name the town after Mr. Rose? So they did. Roseburg is named after a Freemason, Aaron Rose, who arrived by covered wagon via the Applegate Trail and laid out and platted the town. Rose is buried in the Masonic Cemetery. Like Sandy Hook, both towns had a Masonic Lodge that was in existence longer than the town was. But that is not all. I'm going to tell you why I think that the massacre was a false flag. Roseburg is an isolated community. Being surrounded by mountains on all four sides provides this isolation situation. There's only about 22,000 people in the town. It has a sheriff. You probably saw him on TV. That is very, very pro-Second Amendment. The sheriff wrote the Vice President of the United States, Joe Biden, and told him that he would not obey any law that limited the Second Amendment. Kind of like Kim Rose, is that her name? Kim Davis. He also made a YouTube that said that the Sandy Hook massacre was a hoax. He's a sheriff. Well, then the president of Umbach Community College retired. Or as our friend told us the truth, he was urged out in June. His name is Joe Olson. His presidency was a complete failure as he has attempted to spend money on building an industrial arts building while the attendance of the school was getting lower each year. He was interviewed and said that, quote, the school has only one security officer on duty at a time and that person isn't armed, unquote. He said that last year, one of the biggest debates on campus was whether the school should have armed security officers. He says the college had three training exercises with local law agencies in the past 2 years. Quote, but you can never be prepared for something like this, unquote. Olson had announced his retirement from the presidency would be December 31st, 2015. He planned to stay on through the end of the 2015 school year to lead special projects, including funding for the industrial arts building. But the school board said the board was looking to move forward to find a new president. His replacement, you saw her on TV, Rita Caven. Did you notice the large stack of bottled drinking water bottles in the background when she was giving the interview? Kind of reminds you of Sandy Hook. Other main problems that I would like answered before I consider this shooting legitimate. The first, grandiose mainstream media headline demanding our attention to this story. It replaced the story of Obama's fake Social Security number, the Russians bombing ISIS, and the upcoming financial crisis. But if the Russians are bombing ISIS, and we are against ISIS, then why is the United States so upset at Russia? Think about that a second. We should be welcoming their help. The same thing happened when Donald Rumsfeld said that the Pentagon lost $2.9 trillion, just $2.9 trillion. That speech was given on September the 10th. The reason you probably don't remember his speech is because of what happened the next day, 9/11, and it went off the news. The second, the immediate call for gun control in the story sub-headlines. It wasn't 1 hour after the shooting. We need gun control. Can't stand it. We need gun control. Obama went to Roseburg on Friday to be with the victims' families. Do you know there was a huge YouTube event that said that the president was not welcomed to come? He should not come here and use the tragedy as a political agenda event. A local activist by the name of Cassie Runyon posted on Facebook to say that, quote, on Friday we assemble, unquote. Friday was the day that Obama went there. That made it official business. So the plane ride was funded by the taxpayers. He also had fundraisers Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday. So it was all paid by the taxpayers. It wasn't individual. Runyon's words were a direct call to patriots in the Pacific Northwest to stand with citizens in Roseburg who have already made it clear that Obama is not welcome there for his planned visit on Friday. The call was regional, but the answer was national. The rally went viral. Not even the mainstream Obama cheering section could ignore it anymore. What stands out about this rally isn't just a national distaste for yet another narcissist move by the naked emperor. It's the patriots who already left from Ohio to make it to Oregon by Friday to stand with the citizens of Roseburg. I didn't see anything of the protest in the paper. There could have been, but I didn't see it. It's the guy who on his own collected a few hundred dollars from patriots across the country to provide high-quality signs for the rally. It's the hundreds and hundreds of comments from people in every state. Prayers and support from Tampa Bay to Anchorage, Honolulu to New York City. People offering money and resources and skills to make sure that the event is safe, responsible, and sends the right message. Namely, that Obama is not welcome in Roseburg, Oregon. Obama is coming to Roseburg at great expense to the taxpayers, even though he's been told not to come. The townspeople have made it clear he is not welcome. But the city government continues to claim that they do not support his visit. This is a clear cut that they do support his visit. This is a clear cut example of elected officials not following the will of the people they serve. There is some debate about whether the organizers of the event have the right to be a part of it at all, since some of them are from the state of Washington. But I ask this. Do we not have the right as Americans to stand up against tyranny? Make no mistake, this is tyranny disguised as support, a steel fist inside a velvet glove. We support the families' need to grieve. We also understand it's about much more than that for the rest of the country. This has happened before. A shooting, an Obama call for gun control, a visit to the location with fanfare and photographers on hand to capture every solemn look and cockadel trill from the president. In each case, those who stood up were told to sit down, to be quiet, and to respect the families. It's only a matter of time before another incident, another call for gun control, another visit, and another thwarted attempt to stand up because it seems it's somehow disrespectful to do so. Third thing, the shooter was first said to be killed in a gun battle with police, but later the story was changed to say that he committed suicide after being shot in his right side. Fourth thing, the shooter's identity completely unknown, but repeated mention of four guns was very well known. "I don't recognize him at all," said Roseburg Mayor Larry Rich, who is also assistant principal at the city's namesake high school. Harper Mercer's father, Ian Mercer, told reporters in California that his son must have had some kind of issue with his mental health and wondered how on earth he had been able to amass his weapons cachet. In California, he also passed two uneventful years from 2010 to 2012 as a student at El Camino College, also in Torrance, the school said. Meanwhile, in Oregon, Laurel Harper told the nurse she had hired to look after her son that the boy had mental problems growing up and suffered from Asperger syndrome, the New York Daily News reported. There are hospitals and clinics in Roseburg that offer walk-in crisis intervention programs, including a sprawling Veterans Affairs campus. But there's no place where people who are psychotic can go for round-the-clock care. The nearest inpatient treatment is more than an hour's drive in Eugene or Medford. Mercy Medical Center, which treated several victims injured during the attack, closed its behavior health program in 2007 for financial reasons, a spokeswoman said. And one local pediatrician, Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, said the city's health care system is more complicated than it needs to be. Umpqua Community College said on its website that student counseling services were limited to short-term, one-hour sessions. In some cases, it urges students who need more intensive care to seek programs off campus. The college refused to comment on whether the gunman sought help there and what relationships he had with those he murdered. The school said he had no disciplinary record. Fifth reason, conflicting stories about body counts and that the school was a no guns allowed zone. There were conflicting reports on the number of casualties and wounded at Umpqua Community College, just like Sandy Hook. The state's attorney general told the local NBC affiliate that 13 people, this is the state's attorney general, 13 people had been slain, 20 wounded, and the shooter was killed. But Sheriff John Hadlin of Douglas County said the gunman killed 10 people and wounded 7. He adjusted the initial reports from the law enforcement officials. Now I've got a picture of the gun-free zone. There it is. Gun-free school zone. Violators will face severe federal, state, and local criminal penalties. The sixth reason. Initial images and videos showed no ambulances, no blood, or dead bodies. There was no crime scene pictures and no death scene of the shooter. I didn't see any of them. I looked all over for it. Why? There was only one picture of any casualty. It was this one. The only one I found. It seems like a very unskillful set of bandaging. Look at that. It looks like I bandaged that guy. And look at these people. Who are these people? And where are they? They take him half a mile down the road to the ambulance. Where is it? There's no ambulance in the picture. My gracious. And he's unknown. No one knew who he was. Wouldn't the ambulance be close? And does anybody like to know what's wrong with the victim? What's wrong with that guy? Seventh, there was no clear-cut witnesses actually saw the shootings. Nobody saw it. The closest eyewitness said that when she was sitting in her writing class in Snyder Hall, a gunshot came through the window and struck her teacher in the head. The remaining two supposed witnesses only heard the gunfire, according to reports. But these statements conflict with the official story that the shooter entered the classroom and first shot at the back wall. How come they never get the story straight? He then forced fellow students to the center of the classroom. He deliberately spared one student's life so that student could deliver a package from him to the police before he opened fire on the other students. So he took one, here's a package for the student, get over to the back of the room, I'm not going to shoot you. He forced this student to sit at the back of the classroom and watch as he continued shooting with two handguns. He first shot the assistant English professor at point-blank range. He allegedly asked two students for their religion, shooting them after they gave a response. Other witnesses said he asked if students were Christians, mocking those who replied in the affirmative that they would go to heaven as he shot them. Some students were shot multiple times. One woman was struck several times in the stomach while trying to close a classroom door. One witness said he made a woman beg for her life before shooting her, shot another woman when she tried to reason with him, and shot a third woman in the leg after she tried to defend herself with a desk. One victim, Serena Don Moore, was killed while trying to climb back into a wheelchair at his orders. The first responding officers arrived at the scene at 10:44, 6 minutes after the first 911 call was received. 2 minutes later, Harper Mercer reloaded his handguns. He had four guns with him, supposedly. Reloaded the guns, leaned out of the classroom, and fired at two plainclothes detectives on two occasions. They fired three shots in return, hitting him once in the right side. After 2 minutes of shooting, Harper Mercer went back into the classroom and killed himself. None of the officers were injured. The eighth reason. Afterwards, all students quickly treated as strip search victims instead of suspects, strip search suspects instead of victims. There's a picture of some of the students being let out. They got their arms up behind their heads. There's a lot of other pictures about what was going on. The ninth reason. John Hanlon is a sheriff of Roseburg. He is an outspoken opponent of any anti-gun law that may be proposed. He wrote an open letter to Vice President Joe Biden and said that he would disobey any federal law that said all guns would have to be given up to the government. There's a picture of, there's a picture of John Hanlon right there. I'm going to read you the letter he wrote to Vice President Joe Biden. It's an open letter. Dear Mr. Vice President, I am Sheriff John Hanlon, the elected sheriff of Douglas County, Oregon. I have served in the Douglas County Sheriff's Office for 24 years. Now, he's the guy that said, what, Sandy Hook was a hoax? I am currently in my second term as sheriff. As sheriff, I am entrusted with the responsibility of providing for the peace and safety of my country's citizens. I recognize the badge of my office as a symbol of public faith, faith that I will uphold my oath of office and maintain a strong understanding of my fundamental duty to serve mankind, safeguard lives and property, and to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States and the rights of the people in this country. County. These duties that I and the men and women of my office take pride and honor in being responsible for. This letter serves two purposes. First, to make a formal request that you do not tamper or attempt to amend the Second Amendment. Gun control is not the answer to preventing heinous crimes like school shootings. Any actions against or in disregard for our United States Constitution and Second Amendment rights by the current administration would be irresponsible and an indisputable insult to the American people. I fully agree with the statement made by Linn County Sheriff Tim Mueller in a recent letter he sent you. Now he's going to quote part from his letter. He stated, quote, "In the wake of recent criminal events, politicians are attempting to exploit the deaths of innocent victims by advocating for laws that would prevent honest, law-abiding Americans from possessing certain firearms and ammunition magazines. We are Americans. We must not allow, nor shall we tolerate, the action of criminals, no matter how heinous the crimes, to prompt politicians to enact laws that will infringe upon the liberties of responsible citizens who have broken no laws," unquote. He goes on in his letter, "The United States Supreme Court has ruled that when a sheriff chooses to enforce an unconstitutional directive, he is violating his constitutional oath. I will not violate my constitutional oath. Therefore, the second purpose of this letter is to make notification that any federal regulation enacted by Congress or by executive order of the President offending the constitutional rights of my citizens shall not be enforced by me or my deputies, nor will I permit the enforcement of any unconstitutional regulation or orders by federal officers within the borders of Douglas County, Oregon. In conclusion, it is my position as Sheriff of Douglas County, Oregon, that I will refuse to participate in, not tolerate enforcement actions against citizens that are deemed unconstitutional." Respectively, then he signed his name. Like I said before, he also made a video that stated the Sandy Hook shooting was a hoax. He stated, "Who should we believe when our government continues to lie to us?" My conclusion, our friend said that Roseburg is a Masonic Mormon town. I never heard any of that in any of the news reports that I read or saw. No one ever said they're a Masonic Mormon town. The shooting in Connecticut was Masonic. The administration was not well pleased by the letter and video of the sheriff. The perfect setup for revenge. Who's the people that never forget? They never forget. The Roseburg murders were ordered from high up in retaliation to the sheriff's letter and video. I don't know if anyone was killed or not. I'm not even sure who did it, if it was done at all. But you know, the ATF and the FBI were at Roseburg way too fast, just like they were at the shooting at Connecticut. And the sudden cry for gun control alerts won to the political agenda. But as a result of this tragedy of the Umbug Community College shooting, Oath Keepers are set to form college student groups on college campuses across the United States, starting in Oregon, to teach students to fight back. As part of its new STOP, Students Taking Over Protection Program, Oath Keepers, military, police, and first respond instructors will teach the students to fight back with empty hands, improvised weapons, knife and firearms, and will teach them effective combat mindset and awareness techniques and strategy so the students can be their own first responders and take out an active shooter. Just as post 9/11, where people no longer submit or cooperate in their own murders on planes, the obvious answer to school shootings on college and high school campuses is that the students must stop submitting and cooperating in their own murders. They must fight back. And we, as the Oath Keepers, will show them how. Like millions of other young Americans, these college students have been conditioned since grade school to be passive, submissive, and nonviolent. Taught that violence is never the issue, despite reality showing that sometimes violence is the only answer. So it should be no surprise that the students at Umpqua Community College were passive, submissive, and obeyed the commands of the shooter. There was one notable exception, that was Army veteran Chris Mintz, who was shot 7 times. They allowed themselves to be herded into the corner and then complied with his commands to lay down on the floor and obediently remain on the floor, where they ordered one at a time to stand up, where they were asked by the shooter if they were religious or not. If they answered no, they were shot in the arm or the leg. If they answered yes, they were shot in the head. If you think a person came in here and got, said, are you a Christian, and shot him in the head, no one would do anything? What if everyone attacked the shooter? He can't shoot them all. On an airplane, a guy with a knife cutter, and the people on the plane could have took it from him. I'm telling you, some of these people ride the airplane are big people. They're huge. He could slide everybody with a knife cutter, box cutter. The shooter did this one at a time, one after another, while the students were obediently being on the floor until it was their turn to stand and be shot. The conditioning was so severe that even was made clear they were all to be shot, they still remained on the floor, if that's really what happened. What they should have done was to instantly rush, tackle, and subdue the attacker. Even without training in hand-to-hand combat or gun disarmament, they would have put an end to the shooting by attacking the attacker. This is not a hardware problem, it's a software problem. It's a matter of mindset. Young Americans have been conditioned to not to fight back, even when it's the only option that will save lives and end the violence. So Oath Keepers is now going from Oath Keeper student groups on every U.S. college campus, starting right here in Roseburg, Oregon, at Umpqua Community College, where our local chapter leader, Rob Price, is alumni. We also have Oath Keeper members that are now currently students. But will this provide the answer? No, not really. It may help some, but the answer is found in Deuteronomy chapter 28. There are close to 150 curses, 150 curses mentioned in Deuteronomy 27 and 28. If you don't believe me, go read it. The solution is found in Deuteronomy 28, verses 45 through 47, where it says, verse 45, moreover, all these 150 curses shall come upon thee and shall pursue thee and overtake thee till thou be destroyed, because, why? Thou hearkenest not unto the voice of the Lord thy God to keep his commandments and his statutes which he commanded thee. And they shall be upon thee for a sign, and for a wonder, and upon thy seed forever. If somebody tells me to take a vaccination shot, I'm saying I'm obeying my God and not man. You can throw me in jail. You can shoot me. That way I will not get the virus if you kill me. Because thou servest not the Lord thy God with joyfulness and gladness of heart for the abundance of all things. We just finished the holiday of Tabernacles, which was the time our Savior was born. Do you remember what the angel Gabriel spoke to Mary about the son she would conceive in her womb? Luke chapter 1, verses 32 and 33. Gabriel told to Mary, he will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High. And the Lord God will give him the throne of his father David. And he will reign over the house of Jacob forever. And his kingdom will have no end. That's what Gabriel told Mary. Let's review. Jesus would be the Son of the Most High, be given the throne of David, reign over the house of Jacob forever, and his kingdom would have no end. Jesus, as the Son of the Most High, would reign as king over Jacob Israel. He would have dominion over his covenant people. This is the result of, quote, his holy covenant, the oath which he swore to Abraham, Luke chapter 1, verses 71 through 74. Blessed be the Lord God of Israel.